the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania Breds on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Ooh, I'm not here. Don't act like you know me, like you know me. I'm not here. I am not your homie, not your homie. Ooh, I'm not here.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
What you gonna do?
Yeah, time is money, so don't fuck with mine. Seeing up with my girls, I'ma have a good time. Step back with your chit-chat, killing my vibe. See, you can't get too much of a good thing. Swamp here dressed up in the finest things. Well, please hold your tongue, don't say a damn thing. See your iPhone camera flashing. Please step back, it's my style, you're cramping. You here for long, oh no, I'm just passing. Do you wanna drink? Nah, thanks for asking.
Ooh,
I'm not here. Don't act like you know me, like you know me. I'm not here.
And I took the opportunity after Bill Gallo joined us to review the two lists of Smithwick winners compared to New York Turf Riders Cup winners. And there is only one horse that has won both the same year. There's quite a few, actually, interestingly, that won one and then the next year won the other. And typically it's interesting, they've won the Smithwick, but then didn't win the Turf Riders until the following year. It's a Giggle did that, Praise the Prince, Mixed Up did it for Bill Pape and Shepard and Danielle Hodson. But only Campanile is the only Janet Elliott's wonderful Campanile is the only one to win it. 99 won the Smithwick and then won the Turf Riders. Steve Haskin, good morning.
Steve, this is Richie Migliori. Steve had to go because you took so long to get to him and that beautiful dissertation about the steeplechase racing.
That's unbelievable. I was going to ask him the trivia question, so maybe you would have answered it.
I'm just a fill-in.
You're not a bad fill-in. If we're gonna replace Haskin, you're a good choice.
Irreplaceable, and he's standing right here. We just wanted to have a little fun with you.
Well, you could tell everybody what was it like when you were a kid and you stayed with the Haskins when you were like their foster child.
We stayed with them.
Well,
we stayed with them.
I love the fact that we have a picture with their beautiful daughter Mandy. Carmelo with the pony. And this is why Saratoga is so great, because you can be out here on a beautiful morning visiting with people that are woven through the fabric of your life. And I genuinely appreciate that. And now I will let you guys talk horses, because I got agent stuff to do.
Oh, well, wait a minute, agent to the stars. Before you do that, what's your schedule tomorrow? Because I've stopped trying to reach you. Because you've got production meetings.
I'm on Saturday and Sunday this week, not Friday. So, but I'll have to have my agent get back to you on that.
All right. Well, is Landeros taking your calls for media?
No, tomorrow you want to do it. Just let me know what time. Text me.
All right. I want your Travers thoughts and more. All right.
All right. Sounds good. I'll be listening.
Rich Migliori, everybody, with a. With an impromptu visit, and I hear in the background, I can hear the giggling of Rhoda Friedberg as well. Steve Haskin, good morning.
Good morning. He just mentioned your name on it. He said he could hear Rhoda Friedman in the background.
Steve,
well, we're live at Chad Brown's barn. Actually, we're just leaving right now. We would have been back at the house, except that we ran into Richie. So
nice. Nice.
So
no, that's great. That was fun.
We just got a stall-by-stall tour of Murderer's Row where it's unbelievable. I mean, no matter where you go, it's the greatest stakes winner in every stall. It's incredible.
Steve, hold on 1 second. We're going to bring up the audio on the Yorkshire Oaks.
Oh, okay.
I think.
I like the four horse.
South Sea Pearl?
I don't know.
Well, hold on. It's for whatever reason. We're not getting it through. Here we go. Well, I can't get it through Casey. So here, I'll get it. Pick it up off my mic.
We're playing the Yorkshire Oaks. And once more, Enable will see off Magical and gain her 10th Group 1.
14 out of 14. The arc is next. Well, there you go. Okay. Wire to wire. She's unbelievable, and I feel bad for Magical. I mean, it looks like about 2.5 lengths at the wire.
I couldn't hear the call.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it was trying to come through my microphone, but Enable wire to wire, and
wow.
she just held her completely at. At bay, and
she had to be what, 1-20 in that race?
1-9, yeah.
Yeah,
1-9.
Well, she's unbelievable.
It's something else, and now we'll focus. Look to October. You got basically what 60 days to get ready for another arc try.
I don't know who's going to beat her. I mean, she's beating everything out there. Boys, the best boys, the best girls. You know, she's just incredible. I mean, that stretch run last time out, King George. I mean, it was how incredible was that? I mean, boy, you know, not only can she beat you by a mile, but she's just so game. I mean, trying out. I mean, that was a good horse that was running head and head with her.
No, there's no doubt. And just the fact that she's still running is fun. I mean,
she gives them all the credit. Are you kidding? At this age, you have to. The thing is, she's won. She's won two Arcs. She's won a Breeders' Cup Classic. She's won a King George. I mean, she's won everything you want to win. And they're still running her. I mean, it's just incredible.
Yep.
Yep. Remember last year when she won the Arc, and all she had back was that one prep on the poly track.
Yeah. Enable is just a marvel, and it seems like fillies and mares, they're carrying the ball, but not Saturday. Around here, we're looking forward to Travers, Steve, and tell everybody what you've been doing this morning.
Well, we actually made the rounds. We're heading back now on Avi and Roddy's golf cart, and we had a nice conversation with Brad Cox. Saw Owendale, big strong horse, and I'm sure you've looked at the Thoroughbred already. He's the fastest horse in the race. I mean, on a consistent level. I mean, he's run sub ones in his last three starts. I don't know if any of these horses doing anything like that. So, but I give him a big shot. But I just have feelings a price horse is going to win. It's not Owendale. Even some of the other horses in there that are prices. Some of the horses that we talked about last week, I don't know if they're ready to win, but they're going to, you know, endorsed. I don't know if he's quite ready, but, boy, you go back and watch his curling. I mean, that was a very impressive race for a horse with 1 6 furlong race in 9.5 months to go head-and-head for quite a while with Highest Honors, who we saw this morning, who Chad absolutely loves in there. He's crazy about that horse. But, To run with that horse with only the 1 6 furlong race in 9.5 months and with his pedigree, maybe he's not quite ready to win, but watch out for that horse later on. Another horse I mentioned last week was maybe probably the second longest price in the field, is that Laughing Fox coming off that even race, which I love even races. And with the addition of Mucho Gusto now, you know, not so much that he's a speed horse, but he's going to ensure a contentious pace, more contentious than it was before. So that's what I look for more than fast fractions. I look for a contentious pace. And if it's contentious and he can lay back and make the one run, he could certainly close and at least pick up a piece of it. I mean, he's not a bad horse. He's overcome some, you know, severe speed biases this year. And he didn't run that badly in a Preakness, so I'll give him a shot. But it is really a wide-open race. I mean, I like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some kind of price horse win it. But then again, if a favorite wins, that wouldn't surprise me either. You know,
well,
Cassidy's getting blinkers on. You know, a lot of trainers I talked to today feel that, you know, he's beatable because he's a grinder, and, you know, he's getting blinkers, so he's going to be even more of a grinder with the blinkers on, but he will be more focused, and I think he's got probably more natural ability at this stage of his career than any of the others. So if he can get a trouble-free trip, he's still definitely the horse to beat. And with Code of Honor, you know, he's been working great. I loved his last work. And with the key with him is whether he gets the mile and a quarter. Tacitus, I have no problem with that. But Code of Honor, you never know.
Well,
Code of Honor's got, you know, there's some speed in his pedigree. So I know he ran big in the Derby. But the question of the Derby is, did the last quarter of a mile get to him? Or did Maxim Security coming in and putting him into the rail get to him? I'd like to think it was the latter. But, it's a whole question. You know, Noble Mission, you look down at the female family, and it's a slight question. If he's good enough, can he get the mile and a quarter? Yeah, but like I said, there is a slight question. And when I brought up last week, but the Travers is more of a stamina race than even like the Derby. The Derby's won by a lot of horses that really don't want to go a mile and a quarter, and obviously the Preakness is. But when you look at the stats, going back to Whirlaway, for those who didn't hear it, go back to Whirlaway, you got 4 Derby winners that won the Travers, and you got 4 Preakness winners that won the Travers, and 17 Belmont winners, which leads me to believe that, you know, it requires, you know, a good deal of stamina to win the Travers. It's a more of a demanding race. which is one of the reasons why for years and years the track record, stakes record and the track record for the Savage was 201-3, which was shared by Jiper, Buck Passer, and Damascus. And then finally it was broken by Honest Pleasure and then General Assembly and then, of course, Arrogate. But for a long time, you know, back in the heyday of the 60s, track record was 201-3. So, you know, it's just race to stamina. And I think that's one of the reasons why, too, you saw a horse like Keen Ice, who was certainly bred to stamina and had the running style, was able to, you know, beat American Pharoah. So, we'll see. I think it's a fascinating race. Let me ask you a question. Anybody you like?
I like Code of Honor, and I'm going to end up picking Code of Honor. And I, going into the draw on Tuesday, you know, we were working off of the nomination PPs, and the more I looked, and I think I brought this up with you, the more intrigued I was by Endorsed, who I had no interest in going into the curling. I'm going to have more respect for him than I ever expected to at this, you know, going into the summer.
And remember, you know, you finished 5 lengths ahead of the third horse, looking at Bikinis,
which is always a positive indicator.
I love seeing that. But yeah. I mean, that was huge. I mean, I thought he looked great. You know, he had jumped up. You know, in his last start, obviously, when he didn't run very well, you know, he had run an 8 3/4 on Thoroughgraph, and then, you know, first start going 6 furlongs, he ran a 2 3/4, and then paired up on it. So if he can take one more step, you know, it'll probably take around a 1-ish or something like that. But he can certainly improve off of it. A lot of horses are on the improve. If you look at Thoroughgraph, that is getting better. Even a horse like Tax, you know, he's got that really good cruising speed that you know, should serve him well. And depending on, you know, they're going to have to track fast and probably favoring speed. So you can't even throw out a horse like him. But Owendale's coming off a 3/4 and a half. And that's pretty impressive. And even a horse like Highest Honor came off a pair of 6s to run a 2 in the curling. But, you know, which horse is the only horse to run a negative number?
It's Code of Honor.
Code of Honor. Yeah. Ran a negative half because Dwyer was very, very strong. I would have liked to have his mile and eighth more, the fact that he hasn't run in a long time. But from a rooting interest, I got to root for Code of Honor because Theo fed him breakfast. So.
That's one of the powerful angles. One of the things that...
For me, it is.
Well, and one of the things to me that is appealing, too, is what essentially is a stretch out. And, you know, from the Dwyer... Where going into the Dwyer, people may forget. The one of the conversations was, well, Shug is looking, you know, to prep for the Travers, and he's basically starting his second half season here, and then all he did was go out and completely blitz that field,
right?
Without any real, I mean, there wasn't really any expectation that he necessarily had to be, you know, totally dialed in. And I like the fact that, you know, going from the one turn mile, stretching back out to the two turns, you look back to the beginning of the year when he prepped in the Mucho Macho Man for the Fountain of Youth, and then turned in that big effort on the stretch out and the, you know, the two turn. In fact, I think at that point that, yeah, that was his two turn debut. So I don't know. I just get the sense that Shug, by the way, Steve, Shug is as ebullient about the horse coming in as you
ever
see.
I've never heard those
two
words mixed together in the same sentence. Shug and ebullient.
Shug is very. I'm not going to say giddy, but boy, he. I think he's. He's telegraphing a big effort from Code of Honor.
Well, see, at first look, by the way, when you look at his pedigree, you look at Noble Mission, you say, all right, absolutely no problem at all. The Noble Mission is by Galileo. The dam, you know, the dam is by Dane Hill. I mean, you got the best of Coolmore, and they'll run forever. And Broodmare Sire, Dixie Union. You go right there, and you say, well, there's no way he's not. You look at his tail female, And the second dam's by Mount Livermore, and then he traces to Bold Forbes and Samuel Hall, who was a sprinting filly, who was by Belinus Boy, who was a 5-furlong horse. So he got all that speed on the very, very bottom. But the rest of it, you know, the stamina's there. If he's good enough, he'll get, you know, he'll get the mile and a quarter. I wouldn't think there'd be any problem. You know, and you know, the one thing we haven't even mentioned about him is his maturity. He's not the same horse he was when he was running early. Even when he won a Fountain of Youth and he was running those races, he was a baby back then. He couldn't.
It was a Mayfall
horse.
Mayfall.
Yeah, right. And he was all over the place, and he's just a baby. The Dwyer, you know, you could see it in the Derby, what he did in the Derby. But the Dwyer, he was a totally different horse. The way he lagged back and last and made that explosive run. Granted, he didn't beat the greatest of fields, but they were good enough. And the way he did it, the way he came from off the pace and exploded in the stretch and just drew off, this horse is just peaking now mentally and physically.
It feels like it. Let's circle around to Baffert. And you mentioned Mucho Gusto, you know, adding some pace at the very least to this. Baffert, you know, we certainly are used to his style of, you know, making a snap decision like this, watching a horse work, yeah. And then, you know, knowing that there was a plane the next day. And it really wasn't, Steve, until I sat down and looked at what he's done and his arc of development. And in a lot of ways, especially with Michael Lund Peterson involved, there's a lot of parallels with this horse to More Spirit and the sort of progressive nature that this horse is demonstrating. And you know, we weren't thinking of him as a Travers horse coming out of the Haskell because we were so focused on Game Winner. But what's not to like about him coming into this?
No, I mean, I'd like to see if you're going to compare him, I'd like to see him go, you know, farther than More Spirit wanted to go. But the more, you know, More Spirit was a big, strong, you know, long striding horse. The thing with Mucho Gusto is that everybody can look at him and say, well, there's no way in the world he's going to win part of a mile and a quarter. But, you know, he's by Mucho Macho Man out of a Giant's Causeway mare, and the second dam is by Seeking the Gold. So there's absolutely no way on pedigree he shouldn't get it. But if you look at the early version of Mucho Gusto in the Sunderland Derby, he didn't want any part of a mile and eighth. But he's getting better. I like the way Baffert's got him taken off the pace now. And, you know, that Haskell, they win 147-3. You know, no matter how fast Mammoth is, you know, the stakes record is 147. Track record is 146-4. He's not that far off of it. And, you know, he made his run at maximum security. So it was basically a question whether he was ready to win that race, you know, traveling cross country, or whether, you know, again, the final eighth got to him. That's what we don't know. Pedigree-wise, it shouldn't have. But early in his career, you know, he was a headstrong horse. He started off, he was undefeated in the first two starts sprinting. You know, and then he got beat, you know, improbable, just dusted him in the Low Sal Futurity. So, but, you know, he was 1-2 turns in the Robert Lewis. And then, you know, he came back 1-7 furlongs and then won the affirmed going a mile and 16th. So now he's got a mile and eighth race under him. You never know. The bottom line is, it's Baffert. You can't discount him. He's got to make sure Jimmy Barnes winds up going over and getting some Max's hot dogs. I don't know if it counts if he has Max's hot dogs at the track now. Hmm. You know, I don't know if he has to actually go to Max's hot dogs, on the shore and actually get a hot dog there. So we'll have to find out if that still works.
A couple of notes about him in this spot. And number one, he's a horse that's never been off the board in 8 career starts, 5-2-1. Worst finish is that third in the Sunland Derby, which was his first try at a mile and eighth, but then he came back with that Haskell effort and seemed like, you know, a more mature horse. He was 8 lengths clear of Spun to Run in the Haskell. And, Steve, he's the only horse in the field. Let me confirm this.
He didn't have the best of starts either, remember. He had a pretty rough start.
Yeah, that's true. He got bounced around.
Yeah.
He's the only horse in the field with a triple-digit buyer.
That's, yeah, I don't see that anymore, but that's amazing. But I know that in the Equibase BPs, he ran a career best. He got a he had a 107 in the Haskell. He ran a career best for him. So, but that is interesting. That was in the Haskell, I take it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's unbelievable. The Travers, you got one horse with a triple digit buyer.
One horse.
That's crazy.
That's absolutely crazy.
Wow.
That is the world we're living in.
Wow. Now, what did Arrogate run this Travers? 117 or something?
Yeah. it's a little different. A little different environment. In addition to Mucho Gusto adding some pace, the other story, I suppose, or the other element we should touch on, Highest Honors, Looking at Bikinis, and Scars Are Cool, all making only their fourth career starts in this spot. And from an experience standpoint, Steve, historically, how has that fared, lightly raced horses in the Travers? I'm trying to think of anybody.
I think VE Day was pretty inexperienced, wasn't he?
Okay, maybe.
He had
maybe
one to curl in. I think it was only like his maybe his fourth start, something like that.
Okay.
I don't think he was. How about Arrogate? I think Arrogate only had like four starts, didn't he?
It sounds right. He's
coming off an allowance race, 7 furlong allowance race against older horses. We won by like a length and a half or something. I think it was like it might have been like a non-winners at three, maybe non-winners at two. I think Arrogate only had, I don't think he had more than four starts. Tops would be five. You know, and he really had no, he didn't have any experience in stakes or in distance races.
Yeah, and I'm just pulling this up, looking at some names to see if anybody kind of jumps off at me as being.
Like I said, VE Day and Arrogate are two that come to mind.
He'd actually a Fleet Express. He was actually making his seventh start.
Yeah, he was just, the thing with Fleet Express is that he was just getting good. He won by a hair of his nose.
You bet. That's one we'll treasure a long time. Let me see.
I'm trying to think.
Alpha Golden Ticket.
You can't go back too far because back in the day, in my day, everybody had to rerun a dozen times or so.
Fifth start for Arrogate.
So same thing. He had four starts. And what about VE Day?
And that was his graded stake debut, we should note as well.
Right.
For VE Day, one of Javier Castellano's 14 wins in the race. actually, it's just six. This was actually his sixth. It was his sixth start.
Okay, so he had five instead of four. Okay.
It took him three starts to break his maiden. Then he had the allowance win in July at Belmont, the Curlin win, and the Travers win. And, of course, the last win of his career. He never won again.
Yeah, it's totally different now. You know, you get horses just find themselves late. I'm trying to think. I don't know if anybody had as few as four or five starts.
That is limited. No, I'm just looking back further.
In the early 2000s. Who were the Travers winners in the early 2000s? Most Wanted one.
Unshaded. How experienced was Unshaded to that point?
Unshaded had run in the Belmont. I know that. He had run like third in the Belmont, in that crummy Belmont, that commendable one.
What a nice thing to say.
it was the best of Belmont. Let's put it that way.
No, I know. I know.
Do you realize commendable when he won that race was the first horse ever in the history of the Belmont Stakes to win the Belmont coming off the Kentucky Derby? You know how many times it's been done since? Like about 7 or 8 times since,
yep.
I think. Everybody does that now. But he was commended. Leave it to Lucas. Commendable was like 35-1 in the Belmont Stakes. He had run like 18th in the Derby. And Lucas ran next start in the Belmont, and he won the race. That's when everybody scratched out.
It was his 9th start, actually.
I thought he had more. In fact, that was an incredible Travers. I don't know if you remember, by the way, but he just got up in the last jump to nail Albert the Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Albert the Great had that race won, and Unshaded just got up under Shane Sellers and just nailed him right on the wire. But, because I know he had run the Belmont, so he had bottom under him. I know he had run several times.
10 most wanted.
I was always wondering about him. I know he's a late developing horse.
9th start. No, he had had 9th starts.
He had 9 starts. Okay, but he didn't get good. He didn't get good until later.
Yep.
There was somebody else I'm thinking of. A pretty good horse, actually, that didn't have that many starts.
That was such a nasty day when 10 most wanted. Was it? I'm pretty sure was that the.
Well, do you remember they scratched Funny Side and Empire Maker.
Yeah, in the morning, if I'm not mistaken, though, they're calling the weather clear, but there was a Travers Day where around that era when it rained for hours. I mean,
before the race.
Yes, yeah. Just sideways, and it was horrific.
I remember the worst race I can remember, by the way. You talk about upsets in the Travers. It rained all day, and the track was a mess, you know, going way back. When Willow Hour upset Pleasant Colony, that was a horrible, horrible day.
That's the early 80s, right?
81.
81. And that's the late Jimmy Pico, right?
Jimmy Pico. And not only that, Joan and I watched that race from right in front of Jimmy Pico's pump barn. We were on the backstretch. And we said, you know, let's do something different. Let's watch the Travers from the backstretch. And, you know, he was like right, Jimmy Pico's barn was right around the half-mile pole. So we watched it. That's exactly where we watched the race. And, you know, I was a huge Pleasant Colony fan because he was by His Majesty, and I loved the horse. And you know, you could see, even though we were on the backstretch, you could see it was a tight finish. And then they put Willow Hour's number up. I said, oh, God, Willow Hour. It wasn't a bad horse. I think he won the Jim Dandy, actually. But, when you go back that far, all those horses had a lot of bottom. You don't need a lot of bottom now because it's like the Derby. You don't need, horses are winning the Derby. And if, fourth, fifth start. You never used to see that. But nowadays, a horse can win with few starts when everybody else in the race has few starts. You know, it's not like you're up against a field of seasoned horses. You run against a Derby. I mean, half the Derby field is made for, four or five starts. So, in the Derby now, we really don't know much about these horses. And, a lot of Travers is the same thing. A lot of trainers are waiting with horses and getting good about now. And I tell you one thing, the good thing is that a lot of the Triple Crown horses, and there's a lot of them this year in the Travers, got the runners up in all three Triple Crown races. But those horses then start, a lot of them start to decline, and then they'll be retired next year. The lightly raced horses, the highest honors, and looking at bikinis and all of these kind of horses here, those are horses that are going to run next year. Definitely will run next year. There's no doubt about it. Will Farris is not retiring that horse this year.
No.
So, I mean, that's the positive thing. And look what we got out of Arrogate. We said, who the heck is this? Judmon Farm? No way they're going to retire him when his first big race is the Travers. You know, then he comes back and runs huge in the Breeders' Cup Classic. I mean, they could have retired him. But look what that horse did the following year. I know he tailed off, obviously, at the end, but I mean, to win that Pegasus the way he did and then that incredible Dubai World Cup. Look at the treats we had. The only reason we had those treats is that he was a late developing horse. You know, you look at the American Pharoah gone. Thank goodness California Chrome, you know, didn't have the greatest of pedigrees, and they kept him in training. He peaked at five. You know, if he had a great pedigree or so, you know, they could have retired him off, you know, off wins in the Derby and the Preakness, and then he wins on the grass. He wins a Grade One on the grass in the Hollywood Derby. Could have easily retired him if they wanted to. You know, then he had that cockamamie year when they sent him to England to prep for Royal Ascot. He trained in England all that time. Then he comes back and he runs big in the Breeders' Cup.
In a lot of ways, this group you look at, and I know, you know, there were some people going into the draw and even out of the draw that were, you know, kind of miffed and were still grousing about Maximum Security and Game Winner not being able to participate. But, you know, I'm looking at last year, Steve. Here's your chart from last year. Catholic Boy, Mendelssohn, Bravazo, King, Zachary, Vino Rosso, Trigger Warning, Tenfold, Gronkowski, Magic, Good Magic, and Wonder Godot. How is that any, you know, any...
Not any better. To me, not any better.
No,
especially,
I mean...
depth-wise.
Yeah.
I mean, Bravazo is a horse like Everfast or any of those kind of horses that run big, but you're still not that sure about them. I mean, Bravazo ran huge in the Preakness, but nobody was ever really sold on him. You know, especially the fact that Preakness was running the swap.
I mean, I guess Country House in some ways could connect him a little bit toward Tacitus, right? That, you know, kind of coming into this race looking for the biggest win. Although the Belmont Derby, you know, that was a different, little bit of a different scenario and a little unusual.
Right.
Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn came into this race last year, coming off the race of two grass races.
Right.
It looked like for sure they had made a grass horse out of him. You know, he had those two incredible races where he came from certain defeat and came back to win miraculously, including the Belmont Derby and the Pennine Ridge. And look, all right, we got a really good three-year-old grass horse. They put him in the Travelers and he romps. You know, so it's not the same anymore. You get a horse that's coming from anywhere now. That's why nothing's going to surprise me.
Well, and as I look at this, there's King Zachary filling out the superfecta at 28-1. So for those,
I like that horse. That like, he came back this year. He just won recently.
Yeah, he did. But here's Everfast. He's now with. Is he with Grand Motion?
Oh, really? You got me. They took him away from Dale Roman.
Yeah, he's not. He's not in Dale's barn. He's elsewhere.
That's like when they took Keen Ice away from him after he won the Travers.
Yeah. But
that's kind of weird.
But in a lot of ways, I mean, there's Everfast, fourth in the Haskell.
Second,
you know, at 29-1. I mean, that's the same scenario.
Yeah. Remember, previously he had that great rail trip.
Yep. You know, a horse that's funny. Other than saying that the horse was going to run, and you and I, after you and I brought his name up the other day, last week, the next, you know, later in the afternoon or the next morning, Chess Chief was confirmed for the race. But I hear a lot of people saying, oh, Mr. Money should have run here. And Mr. Money, you know, who's now targeting the Pennsylvania Derby, Chess Chief, you know, chased him home six lengths behind, but.
Well, twice he chased him home, sort of. You know, one of them, he was fourth, but, you know, he was getting. The whole thing with him is Dallas Stewart. And this horse is going to go off at Dallas Stewart odds. You know, he's going to be 35-1.
Yes, he is.
You know, and that's when Dallas Stewart comes up and sneaks in for second. You know, and he's another into mischief, too. But I have no idea how how good this horse is. He's been running all over the place, right? He's running Kinlan, he's Oakland, Churchill, Indiana, Mountaineer. I mean, he's been everywhere.
He's making steady, and he has steadily improved. He's got to make another improvement to reach these horses. Hey, did you talk to Stanley Huff at all?
Yesterday we got basically washed out or anything. So today was my first morning. So today I just was concentrating on Chad and Brad Cox.
Very nice. Well, there's the Travers coverage. And Steve,
and Maximum Security, there was never one second where I thought he was going to run in this race.
No, I've said the same thing. People were carrying on, and I said I was surprised that they ever even suggested that they might come.
First of all, I do not like. If you want to look ahead to the Pennsylvania Derby, fine. I do not like the fact that he's still not 100% after 5 weeks running in the Haskell. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, to me, not 100% is a euphemistic term. I mean, what does it mean? It means nothing to me. You know, something. I don't know if there's something behind it. Maybe there isn't. Maybe he's not training well. I have no idea. But if he's not training well, why isn't he training well after 5.5 weeks? There's a reason why. And they waited so long, and I kept saying, if he was running into Travers, they would have shipped to Saratoga. Why would you want to train at Monmouth and ship to Saratoga at the last minute? You definitely want to work over the racetrack. He's got a barn here. You know, you can ship to your own barn. Just the fact that he never came to Monmouth, you know, and at the time, you know, until he defected, Gary and Mary West had the possible favorite in the race. And they've already won the Travers. So it's not like, hey, oh, we got to win the Travers. They've already won the race, and they had the favorite and game winner. So I just never thought that they were really thinking seriously about this race. And I just think they kept it open and open for some reason. But it certainly was no shock when they took him out of the race.
Well,
and I'll tell you one thing. If he was in the race, I don't know if I'd like him in here.
There is a point to bring up, and you do have from that card at Monmouth, and the hot weather, Midnight Bisou and Coach Rocks 1-2, coming out of the Molly Pitcher, and who else ran on that card? Let me see. That was in the Monmouth Cup.
Was there a sprint that day? A good sprint?
No, there was a turf sprint, but there wasn't. There was only the Monmouth Cup with War Story, Bal Harbour, Cold Front, and the Matchmaker scratched down to nothing. The three. So really, it's just the fillies. It's just the two 1-2 finishers coming out of the Molly Pitcher.
Speaking of Midnight Bisou, by the way, watch out for, I know I was just over there, but I liked her even before. Watch out for Wildcat. Wildcat could run.
Why wouldn't she?
She's going to be third choice, so.
Well, I'll tell you in there who I thought was interesting among the others. That was the other Mott. Golden Award for Jane
Lyons.
She's
a really good filly. She ran huge in the Shoevee. She ran huge.
She's a nice horse. Nothing wrong with her.
No.
Steve, since we're touching on other races, we should talk about the Alan Jerkins for a minute. And, the sprinters, we don't really – it's funny. We don't necessarily, out of this group this year, a lot of times you do have refugees from the Triple Crown season. We really don't in this particular edition. We've got horses that made the commitment. I suppose Roaten is the only refugee. The rest of them, made earlier commitments to turning back, including Nitrous and Mind Control, Hog Creek Hustle. Once he
call Paul.
Yeah. Well, he.
What about Chancelot?
Well, Chancelot has been a sprinter from day one.
Yeah. I thought you hadn't mentioned him, so I didn't know if you were.
Well, no, I just
went,
I was
him
saying,
when you talked about
the horses.
When you were talking about Row 8 and then mentioned the other sprinters.
No, the theme was the horses,
all cutting back.
right. I mean, that we only Rowayton is the only recent convert, you know, away from, you know, expectations around two turns. He's cutting back out of the Curlin. Everybody else, Hog Creek Hustle and the Big S, Mind Control, Nitro.
You see it a lot.
It's a lot, you know.
Because this race, you know, even when it was the King's Bishop, was always more about class than speed, always. There's always class horses. You know, the milers are always cutting back. You know, you look at horses like, First Defense and a lot of these, what, Practical Joke, and all these horses that cut back in there, they like running 7 furlongs. Here, you got all of these horses cutting back, running against this freak. We don't know how good this horse is. I mean,
no.
I don't know what he's going to do off that last start. But, I mean, you know, we'll certainly learn a lot about him. But that last race was freaky. Chance lot. Yeah. I mean, who knows how fast he is.
Exactly.
You know, and the thing is, and looking also at sprints, I wasn't crazy about Matoli dropping back from a mile, going 6 furlongs. But he's going to be really tough now, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have. I was, you know, being here, I haven't been able to really look at the races or so. So I just know. Here's another thing, by the way, too. You know, you talk about Chad Brown. If you look at the Sword Dancer, you look at horses like Saddler's Joy. You know, a Channel Maker. These horses have been. You know, they run like 30 times or so. And they were great, you know, they're grade one winners, and they're proven grass horses. Then you look at a horse like Annals of Time, who's coming off an allowance win, and he's going to probably be the favorite. That just shows you know, what kind of crazy loaded barn he's got. But that, I mean, that should be an interesting race, too. All those races are going to be interesting.
Well, looking forward most, of course, to the feature and the 150th. Running of the Travers Stakes.
Will you be attending the Travers?
Yeah, I'll be there.
Okay.
I'll be over.
Have you been to the races yet?
I came a little bit on Alabama Day and then came back on Sunday. We ran in the 8th on Sunday with Carlisle Bell, and I'll stay away until Saturday.
Well,
it's hard to get,
get rid of that gas bubble and see what's going on.
Well, I just, it's hard to maneuver in a crowd. I can't see anything to my left. And so you're constantly, you know, kind of bumping with Tina kind of guiding me around. But it's still a little awkward. The thing is shrinking and
You know, Joan, like every five or six weeks, has to go get injections in her retina, you know, for macular degeneration, And so she gets her injections. So I was talking to her, you know, eye doctor, gives her the injections about the, you know, detached retinas and everything. And I told him about gas bubble. He says it takes a long time. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, how does this happen? He says, sometimes it just happens. Nothing you do, it just happens.
Yep.
Yeah, it's kind of scary.
It is. It's just to be, you know, to be blindsided, you know, literally.
Literally, yeah, exactly.
Steve, this was a lot of fun, and we're looking forward to the weekend.
Are you off guard with Richie? Or I told him, I said, he might be caught off guard, but he'll recover very quickly.
No, that was fun. It's fun. In fact, I'm glad haven't had an opportunity to talk to too many of the TV broadcast crew, because invariably they've got this 10 o'clock production meeting. And unless I get them on Mondays and Tuesdays, and to some degree I haven't, you know, I kind of want them before the weekends, not afterward. But we'll get Rich tomorrow to get some of his thoughts going into the big weekend.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah. All right. Well, look forward to seeing you Saturday and enjoy the next couple of days leading in. And the weather, I think, is cleared out now and it's gorgeous. So enjoy.
Yeah, you too. Hope to see you out there.
Absolute. Steve Askin, everybody, and looking forward to Travers Day. Let's take a break. I got to get to Rich Eng. Haven't talked to Rich, obviously, with us having been away, but I want to connect with Rich and get some summer thoughts in from him. And I've been seeing what he's doing. He's actually had a lot of fun. There's a number of people writing about reading his book, reading Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. I've seen a couple of people, you know, thanking him. Rich Eng next at the races, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
All right, carry the four, plus this, I got that. All right. 26,876. What's that? That's how many races you could have bet last summer on ExpressBet. Haven't signed up for an account yet? What are you waiting for? On top of all those races, ExpressBet's giving away 25 million XB rewards points with promotions at Saratoga, Del Mar, and more. Plus, ExpressBet's Fun in the Sun Handicapper Tournament features $120,000 in prizes, including seats to the 2020 Pegasus Betting Championship. I know, I'm throwing a lot of numbers at you here, but here's one more. 500. That's the sign-up bonus you could get when you sign up for ExpressBet. So let's recap. 26,000 races, $500 sign-up bonus, $120,000 handicapper tournament, and 25 million rewards points. Hey, this math just adds up. ExpressBet is your way to play this summer.
Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. Racelens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Racelens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 20 plus into hour three. Steve Askin giving you a wide berth, a wide tour of the backstretch and of the Travers card. And I'm gonna guess with Rich Eng joining us. Rich, during your tenure at NYRA, back when dinosaurs roamed the earth. was Joan working there at the same time?
Yes, Joan Haskin, Steve's wife, was on the staff. In fact, I remember her maiden name, I believe, was Sudol, S-U-D-O-L. So I remember her before she hooked up with Steve.
How about that? I thought that you guys overlapped.
Oh yeah,
I thought
it's,
so.
The beauty of horse racing is, as you all know from your career and the people you've met, is it's just an intersection of relationships. You meet people along the way, and sometimes you don't see them for a while or talk to them for a while, but it always like comes full circle somewhere else. And it's just it's been a fascinating part of my life, all the different people I've either worked with or gotten to know and meet. And it's really added a great fullness to my life, and I really enjoy it.
No doubt. And, you know, with so many people in the game having, you know, one reason or another to cycle through Vegas, too, and, you know, getting out there. And, you know, certainly when the contest season rolls around, you know, one thing, you know, getting out and seeing you, you know, one thing I forgot to tell you, or not that I forgot, I don't think I had the chance, because my surgery jumped in right after the party that that Al Gold had a party at his house, and one of the people that was there that surprised me was your man, was Lou Filoso, came to Al's party. And I've never had a chance to tell you that. You know, usually if I'm going to see Lou, it I would have think during the summer it might come at Monmouth, but I saw him at a party. So maybe
that's fabulous. I got to tell you, if you got a minute, there's a story about Louie and how much he cares about other people. When I was working at Monmouth, I was working for the late Steve Schwartz in the publicity office at Monmouth Park. And Louie was a great friend, but he was also like kind of concerned that we were enjoying ourselves or getting enough nourishment. And he would make it a regular dinner party to take myself and Steve Schwartz, and Keaton Bradar was on the staff at that time, and he used to take us to a restaurant called Mr. C's. I forget exactly which town it was in near Monmouth Park, but it was a very nice upscale restaurant, and Lou, being Lou, would never, ever allow us to reach into our wallet. He was so generous and so helpful to us, and just cared about us so much as people. It just, to me, it just paints a perfect picture of what kind of person Louie is, and he's been a great friend all these years.
He surprised me. I felt a tap on the shoulder. I turned and I was like, whoa. Well, and of course, you know, Al is, you know, one of those Monmouth County guys, and you know, now actually, you know, is pretty much Saratoga 5 to 6 months a year, and Florida, you know, 5 to 6 months a year. But you know, he's as familiar to the Jersey crowd, Kenny Jordan and all your guys, and you know, all your pals that make the scene on the contest front. Well, Rich, I mean, the summer, from what I've been able to see, you know, watching, just seeing some of your comments as you follow the action, and Del Mar, your focus. What's your thoughts? What, you know, how you've been faring the last month since we spoke?
I've had a very good meet. You know, the first half of the meet, actually, the favorites level was winning in the low to high 40 percentile range, which, you know, means a lot of chalk, but it means you cash a lot of tickets, and I don't mind grinding and, you know, turning a profit. The last couple of weeks, you know, how statistically at any race meet, at any racetrack, eventually the winning favorites returns to the norm, which is around 33%. So there have been a lot more price horses coming in the last couple of weeks. So I think the the favorite percentage is somewhere around 36 or 37%. So it's almost back to that magical 33. But, you know, I think the most important thing, Steve, and, you know, obviously you've addressed this over the winter and the spring and the issues that happened at Santa Anita. One was when the racing switched over to Los Alamitos. Ed Allred and his crew did a fine job keeping everybody safe and on the racetrack, and doing the best job they could for a product there and Los Alamitos. But Del Mar even had a tougher task because, you know, being the quality of racing that they historically present, and also the safety record that they were going to be absolutely laser-like focus on, you know, how the horse's safety was at Del Mar. They have gone beyond anyone's wildest expectations to one, put on a good product, and two, is keep the horses safe. And I think they're coming through with great colors. I know some of the numbers as far as the handle and attendance are not where they would like them to be, and I think that has something to do with a carryover from Santa Anita. But, you know, in my mind, having the horses get around safely day after day after day is a really enormous accomplishment on their part from top to bottom.
Well, there's been a, you know, wide acknowledgement that David Jerkins has done an amazing job. This came up with Jay Brivman on Friday last week, going into the Pacific Classic weekend. You know, there was real concern about whether they were going to be able to maintain a five-day-a-week schedule, and they made a lot of good decisions. I mean, in terms of, you know, not being afraid to have, you know, limited slates, you know, running seven race cards and eight race cards to basically guarantee the full 5-day schedule. And the racing's been interesting. I, you know, have had an interrupted summer, obviously, with my eye, but I have been playing Saturdays in particular the last 3 weeks, and had a huge day had a huge weekend at Del Mar. It was really the first, you know, serious attention that I've given the cards. I mean, other than looking at them and seeing how the fields were and watching, mm-hmm. particularly for maiden races, you know, watching for, you know, some of the big, you know, some of the big 2-year-olds that would emerge out of there this summer. But I really enjoyed Saturday, and I only focused on one race Sunday. That was for the Beat Bick Challenge, and managed to find that Prince Earl of Phil D'Amato's for the seasonal debut, winning the Del Mar Mile. So I think I'm going to be ahead for the Del Mar summer, because between Prince Earl, Higher Power, and Ginobili, I don't think I could spend the money that we made over the weekend.
Holy moly! I hope you were playing some sort of handicapping tournament too. You start nailing prices like that up against the wall, you're going to be right at the top rung of the standings.
It would have been nice, actually, and I don't think I'm eligible because of how much, you know, how involved I am with the NHC. But I hope it benefited some people. I want you to talk about the weekend and how you approached it and what you thought. But it's funny, Higher Power in particular, Rich, I hadn't thought about the reasons that our listeners heard after the fact from Steve Asmussen and Sadler, because they pointed out on Monday, they both were on, and I did bring up Tenfold with Asmussen and his performance, and Steve was the first guy to say, I'm not unhappy with how he ran, given how difficult the racetrack, how heavy and slow. And the minute he said that, I realized to myself, wow, that's a great, I hadn't even thought about that, about how much slower and safer, under the safety banner, they had made the racetrack. But then Sadler brought it up too and said, you know, how the horses that were training locally had so much of an advantage over the invaders that were coming off of tighter surfaces and then suddenly had to slog it over a heavier Del Mar. So that ended up being part of it. But for me, I thought Higher Power was interesting because of the way he was coming in. I saw that Sadler had done the same thing with Ollie's Candy, with the turf to dirt. And he was a horse that absolutely looked like the mile and a quarter would be to his liking, as opposed to some of those invaders who really didn't have the most attractive prospects going a mile and a quarter. And I think people forget how important the 10 furlongs is when it comes to a race like the Pacific Classic.
Yeah, those are all really good points, Steve, because, you know, going back to the basics, in reality, a lot of American breeding is not meant to produce classic mile and a quarter racehorses anymore. So, you know, when you run a race at a mile and a quarter, somebody's going to win, but it's just going to take somebody a lot longer to do it. But, you know, as far as the Pacific Classic was, you know, without McKenzie being in the field, the Del Mar Stakes office, the coordinator, was obviously pretty busy on the telephone telling folks, you know, this might be a pretty good spot for $1 million. And he was able to get a bunch of out of the state shippers to come in, including the, you know, the top two horses out of the Stephen Foster, Seeking the Soul and Quip. And, you know, I did see those same quotes and comments from John Sadler on TV talking about the fact that, you know, the track was this year, it is safer, but it is deeper, it is slower. And a lot of the horses that came in from out of state might have struggled a little bit over the surface. You know, for example, Quip, you know, went to the front and about halfway through the race, I mean, he was done, and which is unusual because the horse has been pretty consistent, even though he doesn't win all the time. He's usually pretty consistent in effort, but he just tired badly on that track, and Seeking His Hole never looked like he never really grabbed a hold of it and was in the back of the field. But, you know, it was really an interesting race. It's a great pick of Higher Power and the horses that trained locally over it. I mean, they were ready to run. So, you know, Sadler is so tough. He is dominating all the stakes races at Del Mar. I forget what the percentage is, but he's just been winning one stakes race after another. So he's having a great meet.
Very much so. And that was the second opportunity we'd had to talk to him since Del Mar started on Monday. And it's an amazing story. And, of course, Costa Aronis, who has been on with us any number of times over the years, just an owner that is very dedicated to West Coast racing. And when things were earlier this year were obviously in peril, you know, we talked to Costa, and he, I thought, you know, really embodied the spirit of the West Coast owner that said, you know, we're West Coasters. We're not. This is where we live, where we race, where we want to race, and you know, he kind of redoubled a commitment, and you know, I saw yesterday, it's funny, I was looking through, it's funny they come up, I was looking through the charts yesterday, and here's Costa, you know, despite winning all these grade ones and you know, having the kinds of success that he's had the last several years, when you think about Accelerate and Stellar Wind and so forth. And I see he's claiming 32 claimers and I think he took a 16 claimer. You know, obviously they just love the game. They paid $250,000 for that, you know, for Higher Power at the horse racing age sale, you know, ready made horse. And look what Sadler does with it. Just, you know, it's an operation that is really admirable. I mean, the way they approach it. In fact, it was a great weekend, Rich, on that front. How about Samantha Siegel and Brian Corner with Mr. Vargas? Mild upset. You know, it's funny, that horse got bet like he had a chance, and then he went out and ran to it.
Yeah, you know, he had blazing speed and just buried that field. And the thing about Stormy Liberal, who was favored in the race and came in third, is he's in a working backwards kind of resume or schedule for Peter Miller. I mean, his goal obviously is to win the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint again, and so he may not have had that horse wound real tight for this one. And Eddie Haskell is one of the top Turf Sprinters in Southern California, but a lot of his wins have been in races just kind of like a cut below. So this was really a good spot for Mr. Vargas to go on the engine. And as far as Brian Corner, people have been following him recently. He's had an incredible amount of success, especially with like maidens, first time out, and maiden special weight races. And he has brought back a jockey who is a name that everybody knows, but it's been from different locations, Mr. Aaron Greider. Those two have teamed up for a lot of big wins together in Southern California, and Aaron has had success almost anywhere that he has ridden.
for a while, and it's great to see him back in Southern California.
You know, it's funny that you bring up – that's crazy that you bring up Grider's name. And yesterday, in fact, here's another overlap for you, Rich. Yesterday, we had a visit with John Mazza from Monmouth. And Grider, if I'm not mistaken, I think Grider, when John won the hopeful, because Grider spent plenty of time in Jersey.
Oh yeah, when I was there working with Mr. Steve Schwartz, Aaron Grider wrote at least two of the years that I was there, and he was like in the top three in the jockey standings, if not the leader.
Well, I am pretty sure that he rode the hopeful winner, the grade one winner that John Mazza had that we talked about. Great Navigator.
Oh, okay.
I'm almost positive that I'm curious now that comes up. I'm curious if that. I mean, that would have to be fairly early in Aaron's – that's the early 90s. So it's got to be fairly early in Aaron Grider's career, and I wonder if that was his first grade one.
Well, you know, I believe his apprenticeship was maybe in the mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
And he set up shop in a lot of places. I remember because he was at Monmouth when I was working in Monmouth, and, you know, one of the leading riders there. And then he switched his tack to New York for a while. And
that's right. I remember that.
You know, took on the New York colony. And but everywhere he has ridden, he has had success. I think a lot has to do with Aaron's personality. I mean, he's really a gregarious person, very easy to talk to and get along with. And he's very, very intelligent. He's one of those jockeys when he gets on a horse, say, in the mornings, he can get off and he can actually tell the trainer something about how the horse went. You know, he'll probably be a fantastic trainer if he ever wanted to go in that direction later on in his life. But he's just skilled in so many ways. He's really always a pleasure to be around.
Well, and I was off by a number of years, it turns out. His first grade one, Aaron Grider's first grade one, came in 1987. I mean, literally at the beginning of his career, he won the Matriarch on Asteroid Field for John Gosden.
Oh, my. Wiping away the cobwebs here.
How about that? A first grade one.
Yeah.
That's certainly a memorable one. And actually, he won a few others. He won the Beverly Hills, also at Hollywood for... That was on Fitzwilliam Place. Wow. So, and who's that? Let's see. That was for Charlie Whittingham. And he won the Arlington Washington Futurity in 89. So he had actually won three grade ones by the time he won the Hopeful.
Yeah. You know, I cannot remember if Aaron won an Eclipse Award as an apprentice. But he was certainly had that type of season, and that's where he picked up obviously the nickname that makes perfect sense for him, Grider the Rider,
which is cute. Secret Hello won the Arlington Washington when it was a Grade One. Gosh, that feels like a million years ago. Frankie Brothers, Secret Hello. How about that? Well, there we go, Aaron Grider. And you know, it's funny that Aaron, it looked for a little bit like he was headed to a TV broadcasting career. And, you know, he was kind of getting up into the booth and then sidling back and taking some calls here and there. But he's winning pretty regularly right now.
Oh, yeah, he's winning a lot, as I said, for Brian Coroner. And, you know, Aaron's a good-looking guy, and he speaks so well, but... if I were him, just a small piece of advice, I would keep riding winners until he makes the choice that he wants to switch careers. He could probably go into the announcer's booth. The transfer of the switch would be seamless. But, he can still horseback. He's got a lot of juice left in his tank.
Well, he's also got maybe he's got 32 wins so far this year from 231 starts. So he's winning at about 15%. He is only 113 wins away from 4,000 in his career. And when you start to flirt with that kind of a number, that can motivate a guy too.
Yeah, that's a heck of a career he's had, and you talked about the stakes races. So he has ridden at the highest levels, and it's really that'll be fun for him to get to that mark soon.
Well, and arguably his biggest horse, Well Armed, who won the World Cup, won the Dubai World Cup, and I'm just looking at some of the big names. Say Florida Sandy. He won $500,000 on Say Florida Sandy. How about that? I would not have remembered him as many times as we saw Say Florida Sandy run. I would not have automatically thought of Grider as his regular rider.
And also, if I'm not mistaken, when you mentioned Dubai, didn't he ride in Dubai for a period of time?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aaron Grider coming. You never know who's going to get discussed on the show. That's what makes it. That's what makes it fun. Rich, we'll get a couple of opinions maybe from off of your plays today. But have you had a chance to look at this field for the Travers Saturday?
You know what? I looked at the draw, but I have not looked at the PPs and really dug into it. But it's really a nice field, obviously. You know, I know Bob Baffert had to substitute Mucho Gusto for game winner, but, you know, people are going to not sleep on Mucho Gusto. That's a pretty good racehorse there. So he's coming in for the race. And I know Maximum Security is also bypassed. I would take a gander that the Pennsylvania Derby is probably going to be his next call. But it's, you know, kind of like the best of the rest, and I'm looking forward to it. It's the Travers is always, they call it the Midsummer Derby for a real good reason.
Well, in that case, let's maybe come up with a play or two for today. Del Mar, and kind of a modest card, I thought, today. There wasn't a lot that sort of grabbed me as potential action. What do you got?
Well, I tell you what, I'll start with a horse that I like, actually, at Saratoga in I actually looked at the dirt races because I knew for sure that the dirt races were going to run on the dirt. So in the fourth race, I'm going to give a shot to number one, Sergeant Drive, with Jose Ortiz up. This horse was just claimed by Rob. Is his name, last name pronounced Atrus or Atrus?
Atrus, yeah, Rob Atrus.
Atrus, yeah. So he's had a very, very effective resume for claiming horses, and he claimed this horse at $50,000. It just happens to be a tappet. So Lord knows if he can get the light to go on and a horse like this, he may have himself a pretty good claim. But the first step is to run protected in this starter allowance, $50,000 at Saratoga. So I'm going to give Sergeant Drive a chance to improve for Rob and Jose Ortiz and maybe bigger and better things. This might be a horse to keep an eye on. As far as Del Mar, I'm going to give a horse out that actually I had really loved two races ago, but if you go to the fourth race at Del Mar, it's just a pretty modest 6 furlong, claiming $20,000 non-winners of 3 lifetime. But I really liked two races back to number 8, Verinsky. This horse was a ship and win horse. Mike Pulich trained and was ridden by Drayden Van Dyke. But when this horse came up from Emerald Downs, this horse was definitely overlooked, went off at 6-1. And this horse absolutely airballed. The running line in the racer farm actually doesn't justify how easily this horse won this race for Drayden. And then they tried turf last time out, and the horse didn't run a step, quite frankly, and now is run back on the main track again in the sprint in the non-winners of 3 for $20,000. And one of the reasons I like this horse very much was when this horse ran for $16,000, that was not enough. If you notice, that's not a non-winners of 2 lifetime condition. It was an open condition. And so this horse actually beat some others who had multiple wins in their lifetime. So that was really a big win, a big race for this horse. So I think if this horse runs back to that race on July 18th, I think this is a pretty good opportunity to maybe get a little price. 7-2 in the morning line. I hope to get that with Varinsky in the fourth race.
Well, and it's a 9-horse field, and you can tell by the line that there's going to be some real question as to who takes money, because in addition to Varinsky at 7-2, you got Leroy 7-2, you've got Toothless Wonder, Bob Hess 3-1, a very lukewarm favorite. You got a 4-1 Union Rebel and a 6-1. So you got 5 horses that basically are within a couple of dollars of each other, and that tells me that this thing is plenty wide open. And then you got 4 horses that are in the double digit ranges. So clearly, there's no standout in there.
Yeah, so that's why I'm hoping. If I can get the 7-2 morning line, I'll be satisfied on Varinsky. And as I said, if this horse can run the race that he ran two back on July 18th, he is definitely one of the strongest contenders in this field. So, and Mike Pugh, which I trust, Steve.
Nice. All right. One of the frustrations here, and I understand why the racing office has to do this. I mean, it's a seven race card, and it is really not, there's not big bulky fields here on display, but the weekends and they're doing what they can and as you get closer to the end of the meet, it's got to get tougher.
I was kind of surprised he actually ran an 8-race card yesterday.
Yeah.
Because they have been running 7 races on Wednesday and Thursday. And the fact that my latest America's Best Racing column was on just examining the 7-race card and how it's happening not only at Del Mar, but it's happening at other places too. Because when I broke into the business in the dinosaur era, 9 races was the normal number of races that would be carded. And I thought it would be a big negative when Del Mar announced that they were going to do it, but I've actually kind of switched over and thought they did a nice job with it. It actually fits well, even though the pick six starts in the second race. But the thing is, the time-wise, it only takes 3 hours to do a 7-race card, and I equated it to the amount of time that a viewer puts into watching a National Football League game. Those games are orchestrated to be about 3 hours. So time-wise, it actually kind of makes sense. Out of a person's day. So, I wrote the fact that with the two pick fives overlapping so much, races 1-5 and 3-7, it actually creates really important races in races 3, 4, and 5. And if you can get some work done in one or more of those races, it actually affects both pick fives. And if you can turn a pick five into a pick four or maybe even a pick three, your chances of making money go way up. So it's an interesting concept, and I'm not altogether negative against a 7-race card.
Well, and speaking of yesterday at Del Mar, we should mention the Brubaker, and you had a pretty, a fourth choice? Fifth choice winner, 235. This was a Stay Thirsty gelding for Baltus, and Baltus, part of the ownership team, with Tom Mansour and Kim Rasmussen and Tammy Nielsen. So congratulations to them. 1480 beating leading score. That's Baffert, I know, for with the Earnhardts, and I can't remember is that an Indian Blessing product. I don't have the PPs. I've only got the chart, but I do know that name. And the horse that underperformed in here was Line Judge. Peter Miller
that was a horse that was a horse that got a lot of juice was Line Judge. And you're right, he loomed at the top of the stretch, and he just did not kick in.
No, but 235. with Cedillo came running, and nice price. And also on the while we're doing that, also on the result front, I didn't mention from yesterday at Saratoga, I did talk about how the main track onlys and the off the turf races produced big prices. I do have to note, was very happy, and in fact, Sean Clancy yesterday mentioned that he knew Barkley Tagg was going to leave Highland Sky in the John's Call. And what a terrific performance under Manny Franco. And Highland Sky, four horse field, pays $690. That's a nice win for him and for the wonderful group, the Youngs, Bonner Young, and the whole team there, Highland Sky, the 6-year old.
You know, Steve, I did watch that race, and that was one of those races where Trevor Devon might have said something like the horse just jumped into the race at the quarter pole, because the Highland Sky just took off and obliterated the field in the stretch run. And, you know, I guess it's one of those scenarios where sometimes trainers find out about a horse when you get a surface switch and you end up finding out you got a nice third horse, too.
Should mention, Rich, I don't know, you provided the push on Sergeant Drive in today's fourth at Saratoga. And, of course, we're a little less than an hour now away from the New York Turf Riders Cup. For those that hadn't picked up on this today, every single race on the card is two turns. There's no sprints today. There's no one-turn races. We go from the hurdle race, obviously, you know, three and a half turns, then a mile and an eighth, then the mile and three sixteenths on the turf, mile and an eighth, the starter allowance that Rich likes Sergeant Drive, then off the turf, mile and a sixteenth for the fillies. Actually, that race now, if it's coming off the turf, that, because it's two-year-olds, that will be a sprint. But it was originally scheduled to be a mile and a 16th turf race. We should, one thing I did not get to today was the two-year-olds, and I don't know if you saw anything written about this, Rich, but there's a rare mile and an eighth two-year-old maiden special weight. And these races have been historically real barometers for success. And there's a debuting Al Stahl in here, Imperar, that is a empire maker. And this is a sibling of Flashback and Zazu. You've also got the Mark Cassie entry for Jack Oxley. And he's bringing back Enforceable. Enforceable is the Tappet colt out of Just Whistle Dixie, brother of Mohaman, New Year's Day, and Kingly. So this is an important group. D. Wayne has got Bracketologist, the Take Charge Indy. You've got Pletcher with a pair in here, the Wertheimer Homebred by Tappet, Portos, and Cowtown as well for Michael Stinson. And he's a tonalist, so be sure to take in the sixth race today. An interesting circumstance where a mile and an eighth maiden boys as the sixth today. So, card getting ready, and we got weekend preview tomorrow. Rich, I appreciate it. Good luck this weekend, and we'll be starting to look toward Breeders' Cup when we talk next week.
And I'll leave you, your listeners, with a nugget. If they are at Saratoga today, I'll take a nugget out of my book, Betting on Horse Racing for Dummies. Take some of your friends down to the rail and watch the start of a race up close. It's really exciting.
Absolutely. And how about that mile and an eighth right there at the finish line? That's perfect. And there you go. Rich Eng, everybody. Rich Eng for Pro Pick on Twitter. And, of course, at racedaylasvegas.com. Rich's analysis for Southern California and the big days. Are you going to be at Brisnet Saturday? Did we lose Rich? I'll find out. Rich may very well be, might also be at Brisnet. His big day, typically big days, Brisnet offers Rich Eng analysis. There you go. Have a great day, everybody. I want to thank Rich and Randy Hill, Pete, Steve Haskin. Back there tomorrow, 9 o'clock, weekend preview at the races. Talk then.